I think Senator Higgins, you had a bill like this, was it last year or 2 years ago, that pertained to just hospitals, is that correct? And now you're going to expand that? Is it hospitals or who?
What did we do?
Hospitals, all licensed healthcare.
Okay, all licensed healthcare, and this is an expansion, and also you have a state council on disability.
Mm-hmm. There's a new report.
As a report, so, and they made up of lots of different folks, and they agree with what you're trying to do. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. This bill is the consensus language from that working group.
So with that, welcome.
Oh, sorry.
Welcome to the committee. You may start.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill before you expands the application of the existing Safe Patient Handling Act that this committee looked at a couple of years ago. And we're coming back to deal with the unlicensed healthcare facilities such as physician and dental offices. Each office doesn't have a specific license. It's the people who work in them. The statute that we passed 2 years ago required the establishment of a work group to determine the ability to expand coverage. And the report that you just referenced, Mr. Chair, was provided. And the bill that's before you is the consensus language from that working group. The bill requires that covered clinical settings develop a written safe patient handling plan by July 1st of 2010 to achieve the goal of minimizing manual lifting of patients by direct patient care workers by using safe patient handling equipment by 2012, January 1st. The bill has two really important goals: to reduce injuries to patient care workers and to increase access for individuals with disabilities to healthcare facilities. Mr. Chair, I have two great folks here. We've worked on a lot of issues together over the years. To my left is Margo Imdike Cross, who's the accessibility specialist for the Minnesota State Council on Disability. To my right is Betty Shogren, who's the health and safety specialist for the Minnesota Nurses Association. And I think Betty will go first.
Yeah, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, and good afternoon. I think we started here in this room 2 years ago. So,
I think we did.
We did.
I don't think we did start here.
Yeah, we did, actually. Our first hearing, I think, was here.
So.
Yeah. With that, I am a registered nurse. I work for M&A, as Senator Higgins said, and I am very happy to be here to provide testimony in support of Senate File 594, which amends the Safe Patient Handling Act of 2007. As Senator Higgins said, Section 37 of the current statute established a work group, and that work group had members from the Minnesota Medical Association, the Dental Association, the Medical Office Managers Association. I didn't know there was one of those, but apparently there is. The Disability Council and representatives of other disability groups. Carrie Mortude and I from the Minnesota staff were part of that committee. The meetings were held at the Gillette Hospital Outpatient Clinic, which is right here in St. Paul. And we met during the fall of 2007 and the winter of 2008. The Gillette facility toured the whole group when we were there, and they were able to demonstrate the types of equipment necessary to accommodate the needs of people with disabilities. And I think that was very helpful to the group when they could see what it looked like, and it wasn't really very intimidating at all. The result of the meetings was a consensus agreement, which is the language that would be added to the existing statute, and you have the report that is there. The worker injuries in clinic settings have not reached the level of injury in hospitals and long-term care settings, but they do exist. And as our population ages and more care is transferred to outpatient areas, the injuries are expected to rise. The numbers are also lower because at present many people who have disabilities cannot access care due to the lack of appropriate equipment to help the person do something as basic as getting on to the exam table. M&A is concerned with the injuries that do occur when staff manually lift, transfer, or reposition patients, but we are equally concerned with the lack of access to health care. There's a wide range of equipment available. What is needed in most situations is a high-low exam table and or some type of a lift in the room. The lift could be an overhead lift or it could be a portable floor lift. and the numbers and types of equipment needed would be based on an evaluation of the patient population served by that facility. That evaluation of the patient population and decisions about the equipment would be made by each facility in a manner that's consistent with the statute. The United States Veterans Administration has developed an education and training toolkit, which is inclusive of clinic and other outpatient care settings. The Veterans Administration is the leading proponent of safe patient handling in this country and is the recognized leader with that. I was privileged to be part of that work group that developed a toolkit, and I know it's going to be extremely helpful not just to outpatient care settings, but also the long-term care and hospital settings here in Minnesota. It will be available to the public at no charge in April of this year. There are tax credits and tax deductions available when these types of products are purchased, and they can provide substantial savings to the facilities.
They're in place now? Is that
they are in place under the American with Disabilities
would include
Act.
What yes. We're doing here. Okay, thank you. Yeah, go ahead.
And I have literature here from manufacturers that shows what that would look
give
like.
Some a little more incentive to those.
It amounts to very close to 50% of the cost of the equipment.
Really?
It's a very substantial reduction. With that, there's also a very big potential for increased demand for service from those people who have not been able to access health care in the past. The Minnesota Nurses Association strongly supports this bill and asks for your support. If you have questions, I can try and answer them.
But we've got some time to do this, right? The plan will be in place by January 1 at 2:12?
That's right.
Okay, so it's not tomorrow morning, or so it gives it clinics a little time to gear up, but that's interesting on that tax credit, too,
right.
That it amounts to that much.
There are quite a few clinics in Minnesota that already have the equipment, and I just visited my own physician's office a few months ago and was very happy to see that they had high-low tables in all of their exam rooms. So it is already starting. It's not just a new thought, but there are some places that need a little more encouragement.
Well, somebody's done a pretty good job of homework here by getting the medical management together and dental association, all these groups to buy in. I mean, that makes our job a little easier, I think.
Mr. Chair, it matters when they are at the table putting all of the report and all the bill together.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, I think you were a part of the conference committee a couple years ago when we put $1 million into the safe patient handling equipment, and the governor vetoed the second year of the money. How did that affect you, and if you know, and I don't know if you know the answer to it, how did that the veto affect the, because I think we were buying equipment with the money, weren't we?
We were really hoping, it's my personal, from M&A, to be able to give some money to the long-term care people in particular. We had $500,000 the first year, and we used the same grant process that the department already uses, the Department of Labor. And I believe the grant money was distributed to 67 different facilities across the state of Minnesota. Because of the reimbursement mechanisms for long-term care in the state, it's pretty hard for long-term care people to get money for capital. Nonetheless, they are employers, and I believe they're responsible to abide by the statutes in the state in relation to workplace safety.
Senator Tomasoni.
So we could have done twice as many facilities if the governor hadn't vetoed it, or we could
That's
have
right.
done a better
we
job?
Would have had. Right.
Mr. Chair, also with me is Margo M. Dyke Cross from the Council on Disabilities.
Do you want to say a few words?
Yes,
thank you for coming.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Members of the committee, I'm Margo Imdick Cross. I'm the Accessibility Specialist with the State Council on Disability, and I'm here today to testify in support of Senate File 594. The bill addresses, again, two critical issues, access to health care for individuals with disabilities and reducing injuries of direct patient workers. Individuals with mobility disabilities, including many older individuals, often forego annual examinations, diagnostic examinations, and sometimes treatment because of inaccessible clinical settings. As a person with a disability, I must admit I'm personally guilty of this as well. In my capacity at the State Council on Disability, I conducted an informal survey and asked a number of wheelchair users when was the last time they underwent an annual physical examination. The responses ranged from 3 years to 16. And when asked why they had waited so long, the number one reason, the single number one reason, was that they couldn't get onto the examination table. This bill requires clinics throughout the state to address this important issue with a plan that minimizes manual lifting and maximizes lifting equipment, and requires important initial and ongoing training of staff in the use of that equipment. I've spoken with some grant makers. Now, this is the exciting part, so I want everybody here to... I've spoken with some grant makers about providing grants to clinics who want to purchase lifts. I have been informed by the grant makers that their portfolios are not as robust as they've been in years past, but they do expect that there will be a limited number of these types of grants available for clinics. So, and as the economy improves, I have received a verbal guarantee that this will become more readily available. This is a high priority. Access to healthcare for people with disabilities is a high priority for some grant makers, and so I do have their word. And as Betty indicated in her testimony, the federal government does provide both tax credits and tax deductions to covered entities that remove barriers. The cost to many clinics would be negligible. The benefits would be great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess to Senator Higgins. You know, we talked a little bit about the long-term care industry and the grants that, you know, they were getting in 67 facility have been retrofitted. I'm a little curious what would happen, you know, in my area, northwest Minnesota. I think the statistics are that 58% of the nursing homes are operating at a 5% deficit or greater. And, you know, it's not going to get better for them this session, I would guess. So what happens with these limited or negative resources that they're currently operating under, and they've got to go buy equipment? And, I mean, nobody's arguing that it's not a good thing, but I'm just wondering what's going to happen to these facilities.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy, the nursing homes were covered as of the 2007 bill, so they already should have had that discussion in their facilities and probably have the equipment already. These are for the clinics that we didn't cover the last time around. Dentist's offices, physician's offices, anywhere where a person has to transfer from a wheelchair, like Margo said, onto another, like the dentist chair or the patient's table. So your nursing home's already, if you go look and ask, they probably already have the equipment.
Well, Mr. Chair,
a long way to say that.
What was the issue that Senator Tomasoni brought up about the $1 million that half of it was vetoed and only 67 facilities, but they're already covered by the law, so they've already done all of this?
They probably have. Sorry, Mr. Chair. And if we had had the other half of the funds, we could have gotten more nursing homes, long-term care facilities covered. And, you know, Senator Tomasoni does amazing things in his budget, and maybe he'll find a little, you know, a couple more quarters in the bottom of the sock to put some money toward that this year.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that it's not going to impact. They've already taken care of this.
They should have.
Thank you.
What if on line 120, the plan to achieve, what if the plans are either too expensive or something? What if that would come up?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair?
Well, forget it. It just says the plan to achieve, and I was trying to piggyback on Senator Scoy's
they have to achieve the goal of ensuring safe patient
handling. What if we don't have any more money by then or something? It seems like work in progress, too, that we can keep identifying. Because we got a few two or three years here to develop a plan and try to find some money if we can. But
and the federal tax credits, Mr. Chair, tax credits. And
that helps a lot, too.
Yeah.
Or quite a bit, anyway.
We'll get them about halfway.
Let me know. We do have a quorum, so. Does this have to go?
We asked if health wanted it, Mr. Chair, and they don't need to see it, so I think we can go to the floor.
Okay. Senator
Bonner
or Latz? Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, I think just a drafting question. On line 2.10, after the word plan, a sentence starts a healthcare organization. It looks to me like that sentence is intended to apply to all of the plan listed in B1 through 5. So I'm just raising the question whether it ought to be in a separate paragraph rather than appearing to be a part of Clause 5. And I'll note that the suggested language in the report that we have in front of us has it broken out as a separate paragraph.
It should be a separate paragraph.
Why don't you, you can acknowledge
Mr. Chairman, Senator Latch, yeah, I noticed that I'm trying to, since we're not amending it, it won't be in gross. I think I'll just call the revisor and have them change the database if they can and show it as a paragraph. I'm not sure how we would amend it. I suppose we could say.
Insert paragraph.
Line 2.10 ends after the word plan, and 2.11 starts with a healthcare organization. And
I know
further adjustments made as necessary. I don't know.
We can't really do
it's a little awkward drafting to have a separate sentence that is kind of an orphan sentence that doesn't have a clause number or letter in front of it, but it looks like it's intended to modify the entire paragraph B.
Okay, we think we have an answer, Mr. Fuller.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Latch, I think what we'd have to do is delete that, everything after the word, or the period on line 10, down to the end of line 212, then reinsert the same language after line 10. That would be your motion.
So moved.
Okay, everybody, that's very clear.
Love it.
If it's not, we're still going
to. I don't see a semicolon to put in there anywhere, but we'll let that
go. All in favor of the Latz amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Chairman,
further, Senator Tomasoni moves.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Day.
I got, Mr. Chairman, I got a couple questions, I guess. presently, if somebody's in a wheelchair, I would take it that a clinic would have facilities to do this, right? In other words, I'm trying to figure out, what about a dental office? What does this mean then? Does this mean that each dental office will need to buy something? Because I don't know exactly how this all works now. I don't know how it happens. So,
Mr. Chair, Senator Day, yes, that would be our expectation, is that clinics would have at least one portable lift on the facility, on the premises, that they could use to move patients in and out of examination chairs, dental chairs, off on and off of examination tables and so forth. So, yes, that is.
Mr. Chairman, I would think that the clinics would already have that, wouldn't they? I mean, they don't?
No. A lot of them don't. Should we call on Jeff? Jeff's got a story.
Mr. Chair, Jeff Bangberg has an actual experience. He can maybe explain.
Mr. Senator Chairman, along with that, then what about what does happen in dental offices then?
What happens now?
Mr. Chair, Senator Day, they often don't go.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Day, many people either neglect their health care, their dental care. That's typically what happens. If they've been told by the dentist that they cannot take care of them from their wheelchair, and there's no one there to transfer them, well, and a lot of people, you know, don't want to be physically picked up and transferred. They're afraid of hurting themselves. They're afraid of getting dropped, and so that's why we're here today, to say we need something that works. We don't want people to get hurt either.
Okay. It seems like I'm trying to figure this out how I would do this, but I don't know. I surely know a lot of people in wheelchairs. This is the first time I've ever heard this, that they can't get a physical or can't get their teeth fixed because the dentist doesn't have some type thing to lift them from one spot to another. And I can't imagine, but it's going to be, I would think, pretty costly for people to have all of this equipment, isn't it? I mean.
Mr. Chair, Senator Day, Actually, it's not that costly. I mean, we met with a number of manufacturers, and we're talking maybe 2,000, maybe 4,000. You know, it depends on what, where on, you know, if they're going to get the Chevy model or if they're going to get the, you know, the, what's an expensive?
Cadillac.
That's it. I drive more the Chevy myself. But so it depends on which one. And then with these tax breaks and tax deductions, and with grant makers who are willing to say, hey, listen, we will actually help you purchase it, I think we have all sorts of opportunity here to do some really neat things for people who have been neglecting their health care because they can't get in and out of the dental chair, can't get on and off the exam table. So actually, it's not going to be that expensive. I think Betty had indicated in something, the woman that was up here testifying just moments ago, that I think the very top of the line, Betty, you said was 7,000? Betty.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say if you got to the Cadillac, it might be his 10.
Okay.
But a regular portable lift would probably be 4 to 7.
Okay, about 4,000, 4-7. And then with all the tax deductions, we're talking about 2,000 on the average if you get a. So we're saying it's affordable.
Senator Day, I don't know if it offers any comfort, but the work group, one of the members is Dominic Spazzetto from the Minnesota Dental Association. Apparently he signed off on this too. So, and he's, I would guess, the spokesperson for the dental group. So, I mean, if they're endorsing it, then
they figured out how to do it.
Any further questions? Senator Thomas only renews his motion.
Mr. Chair, if Mr. Bangberg can.
Oh, we're on a pretty good roll. But if you want to talk, you're here. Why don't you say hello to us,
Mr.
anyway?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Bangsberg, and I'm here to speak on behalf of in support of this bill. Just to let you know, just a couple of things. One is it is quite difficult in some cases to get transferred from my wheelchair to a clinic chair like a dental chair, and that's one of the reasons why I go to the dentist every 3 to 4 years instead of every 6 months as recommended by my dentist. I have had indications where in the hospital even, the people who have had the equipment there available didn't know how to use the equipment, and actually I had to wait over 2.5 hours for somebody to come from home to come back to the hospital to get me off of the table with the Hoyer because that person left early. So it has become problematic in the past. A lot of places do already have the equipment, but they're not properly trained, and that's the other issue is that this plan has to indicate that people have to be trained in using this equipment, and that's also another big problem in this issue with regards to safe patient handling. And I guess in regards to cost, I think there's a lot of costs that are involved with people throwing out their backs and no longer able to continue working, and that's a very high cost that we're here and hoping to prevent in the future as well.
Okay. Further discussion? Senator Tomasoni moves Senate Bill 594 as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much. Now, Senate File 684 and Senate File 456, I believe, are pretty much the same bill that Senator Langseth and Senator Sharon. How do you want to do that? Do you two want to come up front and... Mr. Kuhlman, you're going to help out on this too?
Where is it? Oh. Sneak out through his door.
Okay, welcome, folks. I know you've, Senator Sharon and Senator Langseth, visited about these bills, and I think they're very, very close. Maybe a word or two difference, but you may proceed any way you'd like, folks. And we have Mr. Coleman here, the economic development manager, is with us and to assist.
Thank you, Mr.
Senator
Chair.
Senator Sharon.
We're addressing you in relationship to Senate File 684 and Senate File 456. And as you said, Chair Metzen, these bills are very similar in language, and they are instituted to really to achieve the same objective and emerged out of two different parts of the state. So what we've decided to do is to withdraw Senate File 456 today, since Senator Langseth's bill really accomplishes the same thing. But we would need just one amendment to the language. I think you have discussed that amendment.
I believe we have. It's on line 2.7, I believe, section 2 on the back page. Do we want from, what do we want to end up with, from other sources?
From other sources.
Instead of from non-state sources, is that correct?
Correct.
Do we have to amend this?
Just use the other
bill. We have to amend Senator Langseth's bill then to accomplish that.
Why don't we use the other bill?
Pardon?
Oh, no bad idea, sorry.
Okay, so it's all moved. Senator Latz moves at that correction. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Okay, give us a feeling of what the bill does.
Well, the we have these grants that allow communities that can sell general obligation bonds to build infrastructure, sewer, water, those kinds of things, in order to support the bioscience industry. What we would like to do is to expand, if it's possible, what this language will do is, instead of just local units of government being required to be the applicants and the owners of the public infrastructure to support the bioscience industry, if we only allow those communities, it complicates the process when the proposal includes a public institution of higher education. The application for these grants currently requires the participation with a local or a regional economic development organization, and the approval of the institution as well as its governing body. And this would apply to higher education as well. MNSCU is already an eligible recipient of general obligation bonds from the state. However, under current law, they are not recognized as an eligible applicant. So what this bill would do is extend the definition of bioscience business development infrastructure grant program to include any entity that qualifies for a GEO bond. Higher education institutions are not currently allowed to apply, and this would change that and allow for them to be able to apply for these grants. And it is expected that all public higher education facilities would be eligible to apply.
Including the Board of Regents, of course.
Yes, they would be the governing body.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chair, if somebody could just make that motion to change those two words there.
I think Senator Latz, my memory serves me right, already took care of that for you, or for us, Senator Langseth. So, Mr. Coleman, why don't you visit with the committee a second on why this is a good thing to do? Would you please?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, committee members, for the record, my name is Terry Coleman. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Public Facilities Authority, and I'm also under contract with DEED to manage the Community Assistance Office, which includes the Bioscience Infrastructure Program. In the past year, we've had two projects come to us in partnership between the local units of government and MNSCU to expand on campus with MNSCU building to accommodate a bioscience business. And it has been, the negotiations get real complicated because we require an entity, a local unit of government, to be the applicant and the owner of the facility, and yet, MNSCU, it's on MNSCU property, MNSCU buildings. So we just wanted to expand it. And it's kind of like, we're dealing with three-legged stool is how someone described this. You know, when you're looking at bioscience, you've got local units of government, you've got business, but the real key link that's needed to get this program working to its fullest possible extent is to bring in the higher academics or Minsky University of Minnesota into it. And then I think you've got a great combination of partnerships to get these projects going, because they are a lot of startups, a lot of laboratory work, and if you can bring Minsky in, you've got you can share, you know, lab facilities, and students can earn.
Mr. Coleman, how
opportunities?
How much money is in that fund now? Is there bonding money already there?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I hate to guess right now because I don't have the numbers at the top of my head, but I think there's a little over $1 million. I think the maximum grant is $500,000. That any one participant can achieve. No, I'll take that back. There was $4 or $5 million, and the max grant is $2 million. I think from a policy standpoint, we set a limit of $1 million unless it's extraordinary situations. And we've, like I say, we've got a couple, or at least one project we know is ready to go.
Yeah, a couple of them, I think.
And I think two of them are ready to go once this bill passes. But
the administration supports this, and
yes, it was.
Just gives another tool or another option for the higher ed. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr.
They
Chair.
They could go into that pool.
Yeah, they were.
It's already established, right?
Yes, they put this in the governor's budget proposal, but to move it along a little faster got pulled out, and obviously both these senators have a vested interest in their district getting this legislation passed sooner rather than later.
Well, that isn't so good. Vested,
Not personally.
They're going.
Mr. Chair, question.
Oh, Senator Saltzman, I don't know how you could. This doesn't pass the test, does it?
The smell test.
Senator Saltzman.
Mr. Chair.
You're just going to bat for your communities and for the state of Minnesota. Is that correct? Yes. Yeah.
On that point, I know there's been some discussion about how we want to spread the wealth around. And is there any opposition from some of these other local government units in counties, cities, towns, special districts, et cetera, because there would be greater competition for these funds? And universities tend to have other means of support. And I totally support we need to bring together academia and our businesses, but has there been any pushback that this would create greater competition for limited dollars?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saltz.
Yes.
No, there isn't. In matter of fact, I just talked with a League of Cities staff person, and they were supporting this, obviously, because it is something that cities are very interested in. That, like I say, it's really putting that third leg on the stool to make this program really work well, and I think everybody recognizes that.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I really wanted to just make sure we had covered that because, you know, in some cases people will say that we need to be broader in where we are putting these kinds of facilities. So thank you for checking on that.
Two-legged stool.
Mr. Chair, one of the issues that was that came with the project in Mankato that brings me to the table, what that interest is that we're talking about, is an emissions lab, and it's a very unique lab in the state of Minnesota. But in order to apply for these grants last year when this process was in place, the university would have to partner with a local unit of government, a city or a county, would have to own the land. And that's where this struggle, at least in our area, emerged, that became complicated. So this language allows, rather than the university having to ask the local unit of government to engage in ownership of the land when the project really is an emissions lab that is going to take advantage of all the fabulous kinds of engineering expertise and research at the university to play that role. The university can take the financial responsibility and have the oversight and develop this project that industry can use and blend with absolutely fabulous research and intellectual resources from the university. So it really was the complication of trying to work out how the language allowed for the municipalities or the counties to pay for the infrastructure and that they had to own the land. And this change breaks open some of that difficulty so that the projects that have already been approved can move forward.
Okay. So, Bill, so we're going to move Senator Langseth's bill, and if you guys want to change authors, you could do that on the floor later if you'd like, whoever. But does this have to go anywhere else?
I don't think so.
Think so? Okay. Senator Skoy?
I'd be happy to move the bill, Mr. Chairman.
On the Skoy motion that to recommend Senate 684 be recommended to pass, sent to the floor. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Sharon, did you have another?
Yes.
Senate File 643, Workforce Investment Regional Economic Development Program. Wired?
Yeah, that's Wired.
Welcome.
Thank you.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is in regard to Senate File 643, which is a workforce investment in regional economic development wired program unemployment benefit eligibility. I'd like to just give you a little context for this. As you all know, I represent Senate District 23. It's in the Mankato area. And this gentleman next to me, Dennis Seamer, who is the CEO of VTech Corporation, contacted and had conversations with Karen Wagner, who's here in the audience from our local workforce center. And they began to talk about a problem, and that is with the economic downturn in, actually throughout the country and in our state, employers such as VTech, that have highly skilled, specialized people who have very important skills that have been developed over a long period of time, highly valued by those companies, may be laid off during this economic downturn. And what an employer would like to do in this environment is create an opportunity for building the person's skills, expanding their capacities, continue to employ them at least some of the time, rather than lay them off and risk the possibility of the person taking all of that intellectual ability and property and skill and move to other parts of the country or the state, leaving our area and leaving our state. So what we began to talk about is how are we going to be able to address that issue. And that is an issue that covers the state in lots of ways. And as we processed through this, we came up with a proposal that is a pilot project to take an advantage of the shared work program, which would allow a company like VTech to be able to, rather than lay off workers, to be able to reduce their workers' number of hours of employment and then marry them or connect them with a wired grant program that's at South Central College. And this can occur in any part of the state because there are 11 wired grants throughout the state. So the shared work program would pay for the wages of an employee for the reduced hours in the employment setting, and the wired grant would pay for the curriculum and the training program. Those two would be brought together and would provide an opportunity for an employer like VTech, and I'm going to have Mr. Seamer talk about that, retain these highly qualified and skilled persons, not have to lay people off, not have to put them on full unemployment benefits, and sustain a workforce in our area. So that's essentially what this does. It allows some flexibility into the shared work program and allows the commissioner to flex some of the rules in order to allow for employees under this very narrow circumstance to use shared work to take advantage of the wired education program. And that is essence what the bill is about. And with that, I'd like to, I don't know which of, I have a couple of presenters here who could talk to the bill unless somebody has a question at this time.
Yeah, why don't we continue on? Have your witness to your left, I suppose. Yeah, let's start.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, Senator Metzen and members of the committee for taking this time to listen. My name is Dennis Seamer. I am CEO of VTech Incorporated in Mankato, Minnesota. We've been in business for about 24 years, and we manufacture some packaging and handling equipment for the semiconductor industry. It uses mechatronics, mechanical and electronics controls to orient parts, use vision systems to check them, to make sure that they're properly oriented and placed in a carrier tape to be used in robotic assembly processes. We have sold this equipment not only in the United States, but in 34 different countries up to this point in time. And we employ about 65 people, some in the service and some in the technical development area, our engineering and equipment manufacturing area. The state economy that we're in right now, the worldwide recession, means that this capital equipment that we manufacture and attempt to sell just isn't being purchased. It's pretty much dead in the water. Semiconductor manufacturers have stopped. Those people that are assembling products have stopped buying any new capital equipment for this period of time. Now, as Senator Sharon pointed out, our problem is to keeping these people busy. We can use this slow time to develop new products. That's what we should be doing, and we are attempting to do that. However, the amount of cash flow that we have makes it extremely difficult for a company like us to retain all of these workers full-time, 40 hours. So if we can reduce the workforce hours, that's probably what's going to happen. It's inevitable that we'll be in this position. But if we're doing that, it's also an ideal time for those people to be studying, to learn new technology, to learn allied technology that would help us develop a broader product line and bring that and keep that skill within the company. If we do so, we're going to be developing new products that when the upturn comes, which we all expect and are working for, we'll be in a very, very good competitive position. We compete worldwide. We have international competitors that we have to deal with. And we'll be in a very good position to deal with them because we'll have new products on the shelf and we'll still have our workforce intact as a team to continue this and manufacture these products.
Okay.
That's the goal.
Okay. I think to simplify it just a little bit, for me at least, that so
well, if
be
I
reduced hours, go to training, particularly for new products, and still, quite frankly, collect the UI benefits for a while. I mean, that's what it does, right? So I want the committee to know that this would probably be, instead of letting these people go totally and all the training and the skill level they have, you could still kind of keep the carrot there and keep them around. Is that right? Let them get trained for maybe your new products. And it sounds like a pretty good idea. It could be a good pilot program where you eventually get to see how it works. But Mr. Nelson, did you have a... Or did you want to go sit in the back? What do you think of this?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I'm the Director of Legal Affairs for the Unemployment Insurance Program. I just wanted to comment that the department fully supports this legislation. We work with the senator in drafting it, and we fully believe in it. We hope the WIRED program is a success.
I think I've seen a bill or two that probably really even expands quite a bit on this one, but maybe we crawl before we walk and see how this goes, but I don't know about that, but I know there are some statewide significant bills, too, that I'm aware of. But. Ready? Senator Saltzman.
I always have a hard time getting your attention over here, Mr. Chair. I'll start maybe nudging you under the
chair. Cheryl, I'll never forget you.
I know that. Oh. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. You know, you have asked us to look at how we can really address some of the unemployment issues and how we can help our small businesses. And as a result of that, I followed up on your recommendation to meet with Dee to talk about the shared work program, and we did that last week to talk about how we might be able to roll this out on more of a statewide basis to help our small businesses as they look for flexibility. And it's my understanding, Mr. Nelson, that you are meeting with the commissioner to look at that you may have, you know, some recommendations for us in that regard. So this is particularly, you know, this bill's my understanding is to assist this particular business as their employees go off to training, whereas in other situations it may be that they're sharing a layoff, that they may not be going to training, but that if you're going to lay off 20% of your workforce, instead of laying off, say 2 out of 10 people, you might cut everybody back 20%, and that the unemployment helps to keep people working, especially when you have highly trained people that you don't want to let go and lose and have them move somewhere else. So I think it is a good pilot program, but it is something that we need to look at. But also there are some issues of making sure that it's used appropriately. So I think in this situation, it definitely is a great example of how that works.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Thomas, honey.
Senator Saltzman brought that up. I think I just found out they do this in Canada, and the program is available to everybody. And a very good example of being available to everybody is at United Taconite in Evelyn. They were going to lay off about 20% of their workforce, and instead of doing that, they decided to cut back everybody from 40 hours to 32 hours, and that's exactly what you're talking about. And I think it's probably happening more than less right now, and so I'm fine with this being targeted at one business right now, but I think we do have to have the broader discussion also, and I don't know what kind of cost that would be to the UI fund, but at any rate, it's an interesting discussion, and we should take it maybe one step further. Mr. Chairman, I do think that there are some unemployment costs to this particular bill, and it maybe should come to my committee. Sure, and right. I see it might even have to go to education. I don't know if it does or not. But
that's fine. That's fine. So, Seymour, did you wish to say something?
Yes, sir. I did, Senator. I want to clarify one thing. This isn't just for VTech Incorporated. We have 5 other companies that are allied in this program with South Central College. So. Okay.
It's not just your company. That's good.
And furthermore, just to make certain that the committee is clear, it's for all. There are 11 wired grants in the state of Minnesota, and so it's a potential to be used beyond this particular wired grant. There are 11 grants throughout the state that might be able to take advantage of this. So it's not just directed in our community.
And there's kind of a backstop here too on 115, 116. The training program must be contained in a written plan signed by an officer and reviewed by the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development, so it's not just there you go, you know, take, but so it has to be looked at, obviously, by. But I agree with Senator Saltzman and Senator Thomasoni. This is a good start, but the society's problems are much bigger than just this region, you know, but we'll see how it goes. But Senator Bonif,
thank you, Mr. Rose. Chairman. I, too, agree with what Senator Thomasoni and Senator Saltzman said, and so, and I appreciate you bring forward this bill, Senator Sharon, because I think the most important thing we can do is encourage employers to keep their employees in any way possible, and that every time there's a layoff, the ripple effects are hurting, you know, the healthcare system, are hurting housing. I mean, it's so drastic. And so anything we can do to encourage business to keep their employees even at a reduced rate. So, Mr. Nelson, question for you. What are our policies regarding if businesses choose to take this approach rather than do layoffs? Are these people on reduced hours eligible for some pro rata portion of their unemployment?
Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonhoff, there currently is in place in Minnesota and has been since 1994. shared work program where an employer, in order to avoid layoffs, can reduce the hours of a group of employees, and then those employees would receive partial unemployment benefits to offset their lost wages. That currently is in place. We have already visited with Senator Saltzman last week, as she indicated, to talk about the lack of flexibility in that current law. This is simply a pilot program because when we were approached by the Wired folks who got the Wired grants, there are a number of restrictions within that current law. And so it wouldn't quite fit some of these companies who want to participate in the Wired grant. So this would simply allow them, those businesses, to fit within the shared work program. We are looking overall, and the commissioners directed me, and we are looking at bringing a little more flexibility into the current shared work program. Currently, there are 22,000 Minnesotans on the shared work plan. There are 289 businesses involved. We pay out $1.4 million a week in shared work benefits. So the program is being used. As an example, I want to say about 5 years ago, we paid a total of $10,000 in 1 year under the shared work program. We're currently paying $1.4 million a week in the shared work program. So it is being used by businesses, but we'd like to make it a little more flexible. It has some real restrictions around it and has not been revisited since 1994. But again, this is a separate bill which would allow a whole lot of flexibility to make it fit exactly for those companies participating in a Wired grant.
Mr. Chairman, follow on for Mr. Nelson. Could you just give me an example of an inflexibility so I have a sense of what you mean?
Nelson. Mr. Chairman, Senator Bono, the law requires that there be five or more workers involved in the plan, and a number of these companies that come forward in the Wired grant don't want to have five employees. They want to use three. They want to use salaried employees. Current law does not allow a salaried employee to get shared work benefits. There are restrictions on the flexibility of the plan. Once it's in place, it has to be in place for a certain period of time. This gives a whole lot more flexibility. It may only involve a few weeks. The current law requires a plan to be in place for 6 months, and then there can't be back-to-back plans, and there are a series of restrictions.
Well, I just want to compliment Senator Saltzman for looking at this, digging into this stuff, and maybe there's a way we can, on the shared work plan, Section 268, is it?
Yes.
Minnesota law, that maybe there's some movement we could do in that area and encourage things like Senator Boniff was talking about and not hurt our, keep the folks working, even at a reduced rate, but we'll look at it. I mean, people are looking at it. Thank you, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is either for Senator Tomasoni or Mr. Nelson about the health care benefits on these companies that are that are going down to 32 hours a week. Are they maintaining their health care benefits? Are they being?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. That's extremely
pretty
important.
Good.
Yeah. It's very good.
Better than
most. Yeah, they're still working.
Better than not working. Senator Rosen, did you follow? Or?
Well, if nobody else had a question, I was going to move the bill.
Okay. That sounds like progress. Well, I believe Senator Tomasoni's division, we sent out, no, you sent it to full finance, and then they, so your motion is to move the bill to the finance committee. Senator Sharon, did you have a question? I think things are going pretty good. So
yeah, I think they are. I don't want to mess this up very much, but I do want to, I'm very appreciative. I want to give Mr. Seymour the credit because the concepts that we're talking about in terms of a general look at how we're using unemployment compensation benefits was originally his idea. We had to narrow the scope because of federal implications, a lot of things that have to be studied around how we deal with shared work programs. So I want you to understand that it really came out of industry, the initiative, to take a look at how we might change this. The other thing I would ask your help with as a committee is the timeliness of getting this onto the floor and passed, because the company that wants to use this in our area needs to marry it immediately with a wired grant program, and delays will make it very difficult for them to be able to hold on to these employees. So anything we can do to move it through would be very helpful.
Senator Tomasoni has assured us that he will move it as fast as he can.
And Mr. Chairman, maybe just one more comment from Mr. Nelson about, does this fit in anywhere with the incumbent workers training and dislocated workers? Is there any way of marrying it with those programs? Or is this completely different?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, I will look into that with the dislocated worker folks and the incumbent training worker folks and get back with you on that.
Okay. All right.
I think the first bill passed out of the Senate and the House this year was a UI bill, and we moved with it. Mr. Nelson, was it like a week or something? Very fast, because of the importance, too, of the timing. So,
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Letts?
Senator Sharon's comments gave me some real serious questions about this bill. I don't know. I'm just kidding.
I'm ready to go. Was that overselling? Or your dad always said, if you have the order... Shut up.
Right.
Get the deal, right?
That's
what
right.
We were.
Yeah. Judge another reason to change the mind.
And then you talk up, and it's another questions pop up. Yep. And then all of a sudden, good night.
Good night.
We're done now. On the Rosen motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Thank you very much.
Thank
I think
you.
You're doing good work here. Senator Tomasoni, Senate File 400.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Murphy.
Oh, okay. This is a Senate file. It's not an amendment.
Oh, we have an amendment, though.
Okay, I figured it was.
All in favor? Oh no.
Senator, you wouldn't want me to come in front of the committee without an amendment.
Oh, really? Senator Tomasoni.
In fact, Mr. Chairman, there is an amendment. It's an A2 amendment, and this is at the recommendation of council, and I don't know if you want me to explain the amendment first or you want me to explain the bill first, Mr. Chairman.
Now, why don't we get the amendment on? What do you know what the amendment does?
Or
council does?
Yeah, Mr. Fuller can explain.
Fuller, what
the amendment. Maybe I should tell you what the bill does first, Mr. Chairman, because...
we're going to do it my way.
All right, we'll do it your way.
Explain the amendment. Right, Lance?
Right, Mr. Chair.
Take control here. Okay, excellent.
Mr. Chairman, members, the A2 amendment addresses the concern of utilities that when these government ventures into generating electricity occur, that their underlying service territory rights are kept intact and they don't have a retail competitor. So that's what this amendment, it actually was worked out between the utilities and school boards in the context of another bill, and it just conforms with that because school boards are also interested in entering into this venture. And what it does is it says that if you have an entity such as Economic Development Authority and a limited liability company generating electricity, the utility servicing there isn't required to ship it to other facilities of those entities, the Development Authority and the limited liability company. Probably an excess of caution, it may already be prohibited, but the utilities asked for this amendment.
And, you understand it?
So now I understand, Mr. Chairman. I'll move the A2 amendment.
On the motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Tomasoni on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, Mr. Chairman, Senate File 400 is just an authorizing bill to allow seabeds that are trying to do wind projects to actually locate the windmills on property that is outside of the economic development authority of that particular community. And what's going on is that Mountain Iron is trying to build some of these windmills on some property that is not within the city of Mountain Iron, and this bill just allows them the authority to do that, and the reason for it is because you have to put the windmills up where the wind is, and this basically does the rest of it does what Mr. Fuller said, is it just makes sure that the power is not sold at retail and is sold at wholesale, and so it doesn't take anything from anybody's service area. So,
I see,
Chairman.
Your,
I got Mr. Shabanek here who can probably explain it a little bit better. It also throws in a limited liability corporation language because that way we can take advantage of federal tax credits.
Do you have the consultant with you?
I think he is. Yeah, I think he's.
Well, that's what it says. Consultant.
He's a consultant. Yeah.
Consultant for the Bayard. Hello, Mr. Consultant Servanik.
Mr. President, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Yep. My name is Gary Sirkfenick. I'm a consultant with the Mountain Area Economic Development Authority, and thank you for taking the time to hear Senate File 400, which basically does two things. One, allows the Mountain Area EDA to form a limited liability corporation beyond a limited liability partnership, which they currently have statutory authority to do, to enter into a seabed project. You recall the legislature allowed political subdivisions of the state of Minnesota to be seabed members, driving economic development benefits from renewable energy back to the local community, and that's our intention with the project. And the second item allows us to put the windmills up outside of our corporate boundaries. An LLC is essential to doing business in Minnesota if we want to take advantage of the federal tax credits and the accelerated depreciation, because it allows us to monetize and sell those tax credits to a tax-paying entity. And so those are the two major purposes of the bill, and we'd appreciate your consideration and stand for any questions you may have.
Mr. Chairman, since I don't see any questions, I would move the bill as
amended. Oh, people are still thinking.
Oh.
I'll move
the bill as amended anyway in case there's some questions.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Lantz.
Sounds like this may raise some questions about federal tax law and whether it's a good or bad arrangement, but it's nothing
we're going
to adjust here. So.
And the LCC authority that we're given, they can go to the and Chapter 13D and 26 would be 1612. All right. Well, I think we're going to move this. Does it have to go anywhere?
Not that I know of.
Taxes?
Taxes? Does it have taxes?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Sounds like a federal tax.
Yeah.
Higher education,
I
have to look at this for schooling or transportation? I mean, you're moving a product. You're moving power.
I don't know if Senator Scheid wants to see it or not, but I don't have anything in my file that says she does.
Okay, you're recommending Transportation Committee?
He doesn't need it either.
Okay, we're going to have a Sony make your motion.
All right. Okay, well, Mr. Chairman, then I don't think anybody else wants it, so I'll move it to go to the floor as amended.
And we haven't heard anything.
And I suppose if somebody else wants it, we can take it off the floor and put it down in the committee afterwards.
Yeah, well, we'll see. There might be a little more discussion later on this one. Okay, Senator Tomasoni moves Senate File 400 as amended. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. I think we're done. Wednesday? Oh, we have kind of a important meeting Wednesday, the Workers' Comp Legislative Auditor's report is coming, and it's pretty important that we listen, come in, hear that. Okay, meeting's adjourned.